This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of Poetry Unbound by Padre Gotuma, a poetry anthology that offers immersive reflections, keen insights, and personal anecdotes on 50 powerful poems. Focusing on poets mainly writing today, Poetry Unbound engages with a diverse array of voices that includes Ada Limon, Ilya Kaminsky, Margaret Atwood, Ocean Vuong, Layli Long Soldier, and Reginald Dwayne Betts. Poetry Unbound is now in paperback.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker.
Welcome to the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. In the winter of 2007, a songwriter by the name of Justin Vernon returned to the Wisconsin woods, not far from where he grew up. Just a few months later, he emerged with the album For Emma, Forever Ago, and it was his first album produced under the name Bon Iver. Since then, Vernon and various bandmates have released three more records and won two Grammys. He also became a frequent collaborator with Kanye West. The New Yorker's Amanda Petrusich spoke with Vernon at the New Yorker Festival back in 2019, along with Brad Cook and Chris Messina, who also worked on Bon Iver's album, I.
So, a lot of people, I think, first came to know you, Justin, as kind of a dude with a guitar, but in recent years, you've become something of a master collaborator. It seems to me that one of the central tensions of Bon Iver is that kind of push-pull between the individual and the collective. So do you think of Bon Iver as a band? Is it a more kind of fluid enterprise?
It's never been nailed down for me. You know, if anything, it's the closest I feel to a true way to describe it is it's like a little town that's growing, you know, ever and ever, forever and ever. And it did kind of start out with just me. But I'm always kind of constantly thinking about how you're never really alone. When you are physically alone, you got there vis-a-vis the people that you know, made you who you are. And so in a way, I think when I thought of that name, Bon Iver, when it was just me playing the music, I did imagine a town, a community, so to speak, and so that's the closest I get to naming the thing.
So, as a Bon Iver nerd, my sense of how you guys work is that it's somewhat modular. You're kind of building a song from pieces in the studio, and I'm curious. And this is a question for all three of you: how you know when a song is done?
Yeah, I definitely think there's times where half the room thinks a song might be done, and the other half doesn't, and that could be years that it goes on. But I think what we ultimately figured out is it's a feeling. And I think, like, at least for the three of us, it was a pretty simple litmus test about, like, were we all psyched on the song? Did we all feel like this was moving us at the core? And we left Texas feeling pretty confident. We still readdressed a few little things, but I think that's all it can be with this, is that because I think the way that Justin writes includes so much possibility from source material, for example, you know, we just got to, like, find whatever the common emotion is, and then we sort of go from there and, you know, ultimately make room for the voice, however that happens.
Yeah, looking at each other in the eye and being like, is it good? And then Chris would usually be like, no.
Chris, is that true? Are you the kind of control group?
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, I'm not always right. But,
Chris is the most respectable officer on the force.
Just an incredible record.
So For Emma, through the new record, I think is one of the most masterful four album runs I can think of, and also indicative, in my opinion, of a really extraordinary range in terms of style, tone, and sound. And I wonder, and again, this is a question for all three of you, do you think about genre? I mean, either as listeners or as, you know, performers, producers, is that kind of figure into your experience of music, kind of questioning what genre is this, or even interrogating yourself in terms of what genres you are drawn to?
I've never liked genres. I mean, I got to meet Quincy. We got to meet Quincy Jones, and maybe consciously we do try to screw things up a lot to just like shake loose any sort of, you know, somebody staring at you, feel like they're gonna melt a laser hole through your brain or something because they're expecting you to do something. But I don't think we don't want that.
Yeah. So there's a song on the new record that's effectively titled Shittiest Day in American History. And there are a few other tracks that allude to the national condition, to climate change, to our president. I'm curious, as you know, songwriters and producers, sort of how much politics you're kind of comfortable allowing into the room. Because I think it's a balance a lot of artists are struggling with right now, kind of how big of a, you know, how much space you should give those ideas.
It's so tough. You know, got in a argument with, I'm name dropping Kanye now, but got in a big argument, you know, with him about it. You know, I was willing to listen to a certain point, and then I just wasn't because I ran out of patience. And I think we run out of patience sooner than we'd all like to think. And it's amazing to me that people that I, you know, agree with mostly would be, you know, more on the left. And I feel like it's, you know, people with empathy. But when you're looking at the right side, or the side that I look at and I always imagine to be, you know, evil or something, to not go there, to not approach with like pure love and empathy, you're going to be in a battle. But then again, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to have that much patience. I don't know how to get not angry. And I'd like to be better at that personally. But I mean, as a musician, you can sing about it and you can emote about it and feel about it. I mean, being open to understanding that we aren't right, I think, is probably our best bet. And certainly writing songs is a vulnerable place to be in to start.
So, I mean, lyrically, Justin, I feel like your work tends to, you know, completely resist narrative extrapolation. You often aren't telling traditional stories, or at least you're not telling them in traditional ways. And I think your language is really beautiful, and it's really evocative, and it's complicated. And I'm curious how you write lyrics, sort of what the process is. Do you keep a notebook? Is it more spontaneous and improvised?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a lot of that, a lot of trying to improvise something into existence that will exist forever. But sometimes you also got to just work, you know. It took some pretty firm hand holding of Brad, because there's just big giant holes, or I'd be like, no, I think that's it. I don't know why. I don't even know what those words are, if they are words, but we need to keep it. But just to have the, you know, you have to put in the work. And it isn't easy. You know, I just started writing in a notebook again instead of my computer, just to get, it's much less distraction. So you're always tweaking it, I guess.
But there was a typewriter at one point.
I was trying to be like retro, yeah. it's like a romance thing. It's like, I'm a writer, I better have like a Smith and Corona.
I think the million lyrics came out on there.
Oh yeah, the million lyrics did come out on the typewriter. Hot.
Worth every penny.
$20 probably.
All million of them.
I should add one more little detail that's kind of a context clue, is that invention of words too is part of the fabric of at least Justin, but our friendship, and that we used to play Scrabble and just completely not use actual words. The only rule, and this was Stone Cold series, the only rule is you just had to confidently define whatever your word was.
We got one quick word we have to share. It was Brad's word, scunlit. S-C-U-N-L-I-T.
Looks gross on paper.
It looks gross, but... And we asked him through tears of laughter what the definition of scunlit was, and he just looked at me dead in the eyes. He says, it's a group of motorcycle dudes ripping a 180 at one time in a parking lot.
Just got to go there.
Right, rip a scunlit, boys.
Scunlet.
It's very Shakespearean. So, Justin, I too am a very big Northern Exposure fan. I'm holding for applause. There's no Northern Exposure fans. I had to resist making this entire Q&A about the series, but I have to ask you, while we have a minute left on the clock, what are your thoughts about the reboot?
There's a reboot?
I can't believe I'm telling you this news.
I've signed at least 5 online petitions. And I didn't know. When did this happen?
You made it happen, apparently. They have announced this year that they are, you know, circling the wagons. There's going to be a new season.
I'm not going to say I'm worried.
Yeah.
I am a little worried about that, but also uncontrollably excited. I mean, that's where the name of the band comes from. If you don't know, I was watching an episode. It's called First Snow, and it's like the whole episode is like not people going on a diet, like eating a lot of pie and pancakes to like, well, got a carbo load for the winter. And I just like, that's my people. and then every year for the first snow, they walk out and they greet each other and they say Bon Iver. And I just was like, that's it. That's me. That's my town. That's my upbringing. That's where I exist. It's my favorite. It's like, I wouldn't call it my favorite TV show. It's my favorite thing ever. It just speaks to me so deeply.
We have time to hear some music. So before we leave the stage, I just want to thank you guys so much for coming.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The New Yorker's Amanda Petrusic speaking with Justin Vernon in 2019, along with his co-producers Brad Cook and Chris Messina. And 2 years down the line, we're still looking forward to that Northern Exposure reboot. Stick around for a live performance from the band in just a moment. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from the New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm David Remnick. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. Now, this hour, we've been hearing conversations recorded at the New Yorker Festival. And before we go, we've got a live performance from 2019 by the band Bon Iver, led by singer-songwriter Justin Vernon.
I will see you off now down the back of the ridge. There's just some
There is door and there's right in a common case. It ain't nothing that you're saying is true.
With your long arms, try and just give some time. Presently, it does include my dues. Ain't your standard premonition all this phallic repetition? Boy, you tell yourself a tale or two. Man like you, man improve.
Well, I know that we set off for a common place,
and the lines have run too deep.
How much caring is there of some American love when there's lovers sleeping in a street? So serene.
Thank you.
was half of love.
Thanks, y'all. We want to leave you with this thing we've been leaving the last show we play in the encore. By the way, encores are weird, right? We should just call them what they really are, is pee breaks. We assume that we're going to get an encore because everyone always gets an encore, it seems. That's not being self-diminishing, but we, at the end of the night, we like to play this song. I hope you enjoy it. It's the last song on our record, and it's kind of what we were talking about earlier. I think it's got all the stuff in it. Every which way could be seen.
Was the sand in time more like Panama? More like anodyne was a friend of mine. You'd have known, you'd have known. I could profit. I could rabbi. However, everywhere isn't everywhere. This is not a veil or a fairy tale in the least. So what of this release? So what of this release? Some life feels good now, don't it?
Thank you all so very much. And thanks for supporting us. We'll see you, okay? Thank you.
That was Bon Iver, Justin Vernon, accompanied by Sean Carey, Jen Wassner, and Mike Lewis. They performed at the New Yorker Festival in 2019. Their latest record is called I, I'm David Remnick. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.